All right, welcome everyone to another episode of the Jake Dunlap Show. We are very excited that you joined us. If you haven't tuned in, this is the show where we talk to celebrities, thought, and industry leaders to really discover their journey to success. I am super excited that you're joining us. This show is like no other, I can promise you that. You might laugh, you might cry, but you will definitely leave inspired and gain a whole new level of insight into those people that you follow, love, and admire. All right, what's going on, everyone? Welcome to the Jake Dunlap Show. This week, we are taking the Jake Dunlap Show down under for this week's guest to talk about all things employee engagement and future of work. While taking on the mission of building a better world of work for working parents and careers, that's a mouthful, by the way, my guest and her co-founder, Kate, have seen massive growth working with customers such as Gap, Estee Lauder, and Atlassian, just to name a few. Please join me in welcoming world traveler and a woman who is truly dedicated to helping all working parents and their caregivers have an amazing experience at work, Jody Geddes. Jody, thank you for joining me on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me, Jake, and what a welcome.
All right. Well, hey, we do our best here. So as everyone knows, we kind of go back in time on the show and talk a little bit about the things that made us, you know, the people that we are. And so you especially, you know, it's funny, my show notes person said grew up on the Great Barrier Reef. And I'm like, I don't think that that's possible. So you grew up in a town next to the Great Barrier Reef. So again, I think for a lot of people, you know, who aren't familiar with that area, you know, what was it like growing up there? I mean, it's got to be kind of crazy. I know it's like not super populated, you know, it's not like you grow up, you know, Perth, Sydney, or one of these other towns. So what was it like growing up in like that area at that time?
Yeah, I guess it's one of those things like you don't know any different, right? But I feel so fortunate that I had this incredible childhood. For those that don't know, Cairns is at the top of Australia. It sits right next to the Great Barrier Reef. So my weekends were filled with, you know, trips out to the Great Barrier Reef, to islands, water skiing. It was a very outdoors culture. And it was amazing. At the time, I think there were about 100,000 people in Cairns. You know, we had a lot of cyclones that came through, but it was just an incredible childhood where it was, as I said, very much an outdoors lifestyle, you know, lots of beaches, and it was great. I loved it. I was there till about 17. The thing is with Cairns, though, is that because it is quite remote, once you finish school, most people leave the town. So for me, I headed off then at 17 and headed down the coast and started my uni kind of transition. So yeah, but looking back, I feel very fortunate.
Yeah. And what was, I mean, tell me, like, try to describe, like, what is it like? I mean, is it like rural, like you said, is it like, are we talking rural, you know, like what are people doing on the day to day?
Yeah, I mean it's one of Australia's most visited towns. So when most people now visit Australia, typically they'll do Cairns, Sydney, maybe Melbourne, and you know Byron Bay. So they may be familiar with some of your guests. So the majority of people that do come will head up to Cairns. It's very hot. You know, we average, you know, between 30 to 35 degree days. You know, it's just a very relaxed lifestyle, you know, as I said, very family, and lots of outdoors. So, you know, water skiing, lots of sports, you know, so yeah, it was fun.
It sounds amazing. I'm scared. Can I tell you this? I'm scared to go to the Great Barrier Reef.
Really? Why?
Yes. Because like, okay, here's the thing. I like the ocean. Don't get me wrong. And I like to snorkel, but there's something about the Great Barrier Reef that feels very overwhelming. Like, I know it would be like the most amazing, beautiful thing of all time, but there is a part of me that I'm like, oh my God, like, what if like, there's like so many different like animals and things there. Like, what if I get ate? I don't know.
No, it's
I won't get ate. Is that what you're saying?
No, you definitely won't. No, you definitely won't. Maybe by crocodiles, but definitely not by the Great Barrier Reef.
I love it. So cool. So, all right. So let's talk about that. So then you know, you're kind of evaluating options. You're like, okay, like, I don't think I'm going to stay here. And like, you know, I don't know, like what, I guess like tourism, right? Like you get in like the tourist base. Is that the go-to for a lot of people?
Totally. And I probably should have mentioned, like, in terms of my childhood, I grew up in resorts. So for me, I didn't have a typical childhood of growing up in a house. My parents managed, you know, resorts. So for me, we lived in various resorts. So school holidays was amazing for me. I loved it when everyone from Sydney and Melbourne came up, and I spent my entire school holidays like in the pool, mixing with kids from down south. So it was a different childhood in that respect. Again, you don't know any difference. So for me, it feels normal to have that.
Just live on a resort. It's like this pool and these people bring you things.
Yeah.
I mean, that sounds pretty amazing. And so what was college like? So I know double major marketing and PR, and you know, going to a technical university too. So one, how did you pick that major? And you know, what were, you know, those early years like in college?
Yeah, like I often think back and, you know, you go through your school years and people often say, what do you want to do in life? And you don't really know. I think for me, I always did kind of know. And I always had that entrepreneurial spirit, although that didn't play out until obviously my 40s and later in life. But I was always driven, you know, I was school captain, you know, various awards and drama awards and so forth going through school. But I always had this desire to be in marketing and lead marketing teams and go down that path. So was really fortunate to you know, manage to get into the degree that I wanted to do. So I headed off, as I said, at 17, you know, from Cairns, couple of years at college in the same state, in a town or city called Brisbane. Amazing years. I look back and some of the best years of my life, and I'm really fortunate now that I did that degree, and it put me in a really good, you know, on a really good path, I guess, to where I've ended up today. But I finished uni, and then always, you know, like most Australians, we all want to travel, and we typically go off
3 years. Is that right? Is that what I heard? Three years traveling the world. That is,
I know, right? But
amazing.
Most head off for a couple of years. And it's, you know, the best thing I ever did. And I truly hope, you know, we sit here now and look at the world as it is today. And I just hope, looking at my girls, that they get that opportunity, because I really believe that traveling shapes you and it opens your eyes as to what's out there. And for me, it absolutely defined who I am and what my path was going to be. And so I headed off, and, you know, typically most Australians will head off to London and base themselves there. So I had some, you know, great contract jobs there, and in between was traveling. So spent about 11 months in Latin America, Central and Latin America, 3 seasons snowboarding in Whistler, you know, India, Nepal.
I love that.
6 months in a combi through Morocco and Spain. So, you know, I did all of the things that I knew I probably wouldn't want to do later in life. You know, once I had money and wanted to maybe more travel and stay in hotels as opposed to backpacking. So, it, as I said, it really did open my eyes, and you know, it was without doubt one of the most incredible experiences of my life.
Oh, amazing. Yeah, I mean, I think in the US, like sometimes they'll do it, but I guess like it's like 3 months. As opposed to like, we've got to just jump in and start working right now.
I know.
Exactly. Like, it's amazing how it all just kind of works out. So, all right. So early career, you're getting into like, again, like you're actually one of the few people I interview that actually like uses, I mean, not that you actually use your degree necessarily, but at least like went into marketing, right? You got into global sponsorship, marketing, management with the Rugby World Cup, which sounds pretty amazing, with Visa. And then, you know, again, had like different roles. And so what was like kind of like the early part of your career? What are some big lessons that you learned early on, things that stand out?
Yeah. So I think, you know, first and foremost, you know, you can't be afraid to get out there and go for what you want. So for me, you know, my first job wasn't the perfect job, but again, like I rolled my sleeves up and got in there. So my very first job out of uni was actually working for a retail store, and I was the marketing assistant. And each week I had to produce the 30-second ad that went on TV, along with the radio ads. So for me, I was in like the TV production house, and I had the, you know, the stock, and often was like the hand model, and I look back and laugh. But again, it taught me some really basic principles. Then obviously while I was overseas, I took various contract jobs. And I think the thing I often say is, you know, don't sit there and wait for the perfect job, just jump in and try different things. And it's through that experience that you get to learn what you like and what you don't like. So very quickly, I got a taste of the world of sponsorship. And it's interesting because it's not something you study at uni, but it, you know, it is a form of marketing, and I loved it. I fell in love with it. And when I came home, you know, Australia was hosting the Rugby World Cup back in 2003. And I had an absolute desire to lead that sponsorship for Visa. And I didn't stop knocking on their door. So for 18 months, I just kept speaking to the team. Hey, when will we be hiring? What, you know, can I be interviewed? This is the role I'd like to do. So again, I guess my advice is if you want something really badly, you know, put your heart to it and just go for it. And you can make it happen. And I think, you know, for me, looking back now, I did make that happen. And I was successful in getting that job. And I was probably one of the youngest, you know, females to run a global sponsorship at the time, you know, 26 and running the global sponsorship for Visa International. And it was amazing. And I absolutely loved it. It was two of the best years of my life. But working in major events like that, it's interesting because there is a bit of a kind of letdown once the event's over,
right?
Because your life becomes the event and your friends and your social life and everything. And then all of a sudden the event's over and everyone leaves. So for me at the time, I had a lot of friends that were from the UK, you know, with various sponsors, Heineken and different places. So all of a sudden the event finished and they left. And next thing I was sitting in Sydney and I was like, well, what do I do now? And again, that's where I think my love to travel and try different things and not be afraid to put myself out there. I ended up taking a job with Foster's in a town called Darwin in Australia, which is in the middle of the outback and, you know, pretty remote, a lot of crocodiles. It's very hot. but, you know, it was the state sponsorship and marketing manager. And I, again, whilst it wasn't my perfect job, I knew that if I went there and proved myself, I'd very quickly be moved to head office, which was in Melbourne. And that absolutely played out. So I spent 18 months up there and worked really hard and proved myself and pretty quickly was recognized by the national team and then was sent back to Melbourne, where then I was, you know, started my career down here and I've never really left, you know, 15 years later. I then went on to manage like the wine and spirits team. But again, I think the lesson there is not being afraid to kind of take a sidestep to prove yourself. And, you know, I think so often we just wait for that perfect role, but often you just have to get into an organization and be okay with it being in a different location or maybe a different role to what you want to do. Because if you want something bad enough and you can prove yourself, you will be recognized and you will then get that opportunity later.
I love that. Yeah. And it's such a, I mean, again, I think sometimes like we want this perfect thing at this perfect time and not realizing that again, many of these, you know, opportunities, they come as an opportunity, not a guarantee, you know, as the beginning of potentially something. And then you never know, right?
Absolutely.
Like where that's going to lead.
And that's, you know, and we'll get to kind of the startup I'm now running, but that's my life every day. And for a lot of people, they struggle with that. They struggle with the lack of uncertainty. For others, they thrive on it. So again, you know, it comes back to who are you and what are your values and what drives you. Some people like a really stable job and aren't that career driven. But for me, I always had it in me from very early on, like that fire in my belly and that passion. So yeah, I think it's really important also to step back and really think about who you are as a person and what's important to you.
Where do you think that came from, Jody? Like, again, like you're living, you're living this like resort life in this like beautiful part of Australia. Like, where do you feel like that like drive to, you know, again, like try new things, you know, put yourself out there, like, again, let the world, you know, kind of, again, like you're very intentional at the same time. You're aligning to things that you think that you're going to enjoy. So like, what do you feel like where did you learn that or see that behavior?
Oh, without doubt, my dad.
Yeah.
Like my dad was, you know, someone I really admired and looked up to growing up. And he was incredibly successful in Cairns. Like whatever he put his mind and heart to, he achieved. So I absolutely got that from him. You know, the various things he did, whether it's running for, you know, local government, next thing he wanted to be on radio. So next thing, he, you know, was the radio, morning radio presenter, and he was running hotels and, I think I absolutely learnt that from him. I think it was instilled in me in an early age and I got that passion. And I think one thing he's always taught me is, you know, to not be afraid of taking risks. And if you want something bad enough, you can achieve it.
That's wild. Yeah. And I think I've talked to a lot of people. And is there a memory or some things, again, you talked about some of those experiences. Is there anything that really stands out from those days where you're like, there's like this one trip or this one, you know, area that I came in and, you know, saw him working or worked with him to help or?
Not really. Probably the only thing I do really remember is at the time, Cairns, like everyone, you know, the economy took a real hit as a result of the airline strike in Australia. And Cairns is very driven by tourism. So overnight, given we were in hotels, like everything changed. And I remember mum and dad saying at the time, you know, they had two kids under whatever it was, 10, and had five loans, and they were trying to meet, you know, make things meet, but they got through it. And if anything, they became more successful as a result. So I look back and think, you know, you can be in the darkest of times, but there's always a way out. And, you know, I think that's testament to my parents and their strength of character. And again, that desire to, if you want something bad enough, you can make it happen. So they wanted to prove that they could get through this and be more successful than they were.
I love that. Yeah. And I think sometimes you just learn that later in life, you know, you go through those moments of like, oh my God, the world's going to end, you know, and totally. Like, what's going to happen to me. And then, you know, it's like, okay, time will happen. So I don't know exactly what it's going to look like on the other side, but like we will get through it.
Yeah. And we're going through that now with COVID, you know, like the last 2 years. And what does it look like? I think none of us know. I think just the difference of the story I just told was at the time it was a small town going through it, but now it's the whole world. So it's interesting how it's going to play out over the next few years.
Oh, definitely. And so, all right. So you're built a successful career, right? It's, you're kind of fast forward to, you know, 2016, 2017, and you're like, okay, now what I want to do is start a technology company. So what was it? I mean, for you, again, you talked about, again, having your father as an entrepreneur, and, you know, always kind of having that, you know, that like, go figure it out myself type of gene. You know, what was it about Circle N where you're like, this is the thing, like, this is like my passion. And tell us a little bit about the origin story.
Yeah, for sure. So I think first and foremost, if you're going to be a founder of a startup, I think you've either got it in you or you don't. And what I talk about is there's certain attributes and skills I think you need to be successful. And one of those is, you know, passion, fire in your belly, resilience, perseverance. And we might get to that in a little bit in terms of, you know, how my co-founder and I share very similar kind of attributes. But I think I always had a desire and a passion in me to have my own business. I just didn't know when. I remember when I was traveling the world, you know, I used to write a diary, and one of the things I used to write about all the time was I wanted to have my own coffee shop, and I wanted to run this amazing coffee shop. And, you know, so I look back then and I was 20, but I was still thinking about running my own business then. So I knew I wanted to do it. I think what triggered it was having my children. So they're now 6 and 8. So it gives you an idea of kind of, I always talk about, you know, the idea of the business and how it started by the age of my children. So when I went off to have my first, who's now 8, I experienced those feelings of, you know, disconnection and out of sight, out of mind, and lack of manager support by the organization I was working with at the time. And I will say that they were one of Australia's biggest banks. They were seen at the time as quite progressive, had good policies, but it was the support piece that really was falling down. Kate, my business partner, was experiencing very similar feelings and emotions. And we got together whilst we were on parental leave and started talking and realized there had to be a better way. And we're both quite driven to do our own thing. And so out of that need kind of came the idea of Circle In. And I think the other thing I often say is that the best startups aren't built on a solution first, they're built on a need. And for us, that was absolutely true in that we knew the need was there, but we hadn't worked out the solution. That ended up taking us about 12 months. But we knew the need was there to better support parents through their various life stages, and that organizations needed to be doing more. So we played around with that. We researched the market. We spoke to over 1,000 working parents. So we really validated it. And then what came next was the idea and the solution. And that was, you know, an online digital platform to support, you know, the most progressive organizations with on-demand access to expert advice for their employees and managers at every life stage. So when we came up with the idea, we decided that it was time to, you know, quit our jobs and leave our our big salaries and jump into the world of a startup. And, you know, it was the best thing we've ever done, but it's also been the hardest thing, I'm not going to lie, and throw into that a global pandemic in the last couple of years. We've never worked harder. It's coming up to 5 years in September. But in saying that, I think what I'm incredibly proud of is that it's a purpose-driven organization. And every day I wake up, I know that we're changing someone's life in some shape or form. And we're doing that because we're giving them the skills and tools to actually be able to juggle, you know, working life. And the reality is that it is a juggle, and parents need support, especially right now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think, you know, like you said, especially now when, again, your kid's home sick and that's where you work, or this happens. Yeah. And like, there's all different types of things. I mean, let's go back, maybe back just a little bit, and then get into like that, the passion. Like, what was the need? Yeah. You, when you saw as a, you know, working parent, like, and you talked about, again, you work for an organization that actually was pretty decent. Like, what is, like, what are some of the trends maybe, you know, that you saw then and definitely that you see now in terms of, like, you know, how parents and caregivers and other people want to work that get you excited for what you're doing?
Yeah, well, I think the first thing is absolutely that being a parent and having a career are not mutually exclusive. Yeah, totally. And I think that's definitely something we truly believe. It's core to who we are, and we validated that through our research. I think the other thing that we really saw is that whilst organizations think they're doing a good job, when you ask their employees, they absolutely feel differently. So we know through our research, 76% believe their company should be doing more to support them through parental leave and beyond. So there's always a bit of a disconnect between what HR teams think and then what their employees think. A couple of other things that we're very passionate about, again, is I think managers can be doing a lot more. I think, you know, my experience is testament to the fact that I didn't get the support I needed. I think managers want to do the right thing and they want to say the right things, but often they don't know what to do. So their default is to do nothing. So we want to equip them with the tools and be able to have the right conversations, because your entire experience as an employee is defined by your manager or your leader. So who doesn't want to have more empathetic, you know, leaders that are role modeling this for their employees? So that's something that we're very passionate about. And I think that the last thing is the consistency piece. And again, you know, what I hate seeing in organizations is when benefits or support is offered at the C-suite or, you know, to their senior staff. And it creates this hierarchical structure when, in fact, I don't care what level people are or where they're located. Everybody has the right to the same experience and the same level of support. So I really love that our platform, you know, breaks that down, and it provides a consistent experience. So if you're the most junior person working in, you know, the post room or the tea room, it doesn't matter, right through to a senior executive, you can access the same level of support. So there are a couple of the trends that we're seeing. And I think finally, the number one reason people are now starting to talk to us, apart from, you know, the platform and the impact it can have, is that I think what we've seen through COVID alone is people now want to work for organizations that are family friendly. And it's never been more important to not only retain staff, but attract great staff. And if you're going to attract great staff, you need to be seen as a great place to work. And we know that, you know, employees now rate great family benefits in their top three most important benefits. So it is important, because if you think about employees in an organization, every single employee is a caregiver in some shape or form.
Sure,
they
of course.
They all have caregiving responsibilities. So it makes sense that you want to be seen as a great place to work for families and caregivers.
Yeah, well, that's a great way to put it, right? That if you are a leader at your company, like, this should resonate, right? That it is your job or your duty. I've seen a lot of different quotes on this that, you know, you are responsible for these people. It's a different relationship for sure, but it's certainly one that, you know, is very real for leaders who are, you know, leading from the heart or leading, you know, from a place of empathy and understanding, like, without a doubt. So how do you, I mean, when you think about this, like, where... It's again, as we think about this world of like new things to provide for your employees and new opportunities, why aren't more employers doing things like this? And I know many are, and I talked about some of the logos before, but like, why do you think that from a work standpoint, we're still just like, I feel like with some companies, at least that I talk to, it's like, I can see them trying to creep back to like the way that things were. And it's like, what are you doing? Yeah, I saw this amazing report. And people are so pissed about return to work. And it's not that they're pissed that they have to return to work. It's that we're coming up with these arbitrary, like, okay, you come back 2 days a week. And then people are like, I'm on Zoom for those 2 days because my counterparts took those 2 days off. And so people end up returning to work to spend 5 hours a day on Zoom. And so I just feel like I just see these employers kind of inching back toward like it'll be like it was before, and so I'm just curious, as someone who talks to HR leaders and you really has a finger on the pulse, like why do you think companies are struggling with this? I don't know, like these concepts that are pretty logical.
Yeah, it's a great question. I love, like, we come up against this every day, and it's interesting because I often say we only want to work with progressive organizations that hand on heart want to do this for the right reasons. So we'll actually walk away from someone who's doing this as a tick the box exercise. So I think a lot of organizations are using budget now as an excuse. Over the last couple of years, I appreciate that budgets have had to be cut, but the reality is you've got to spend money on your employees. And I look at our platform, it's not expensive. I often say you only need to retain one or two people and the platform's paid for itself. Like, for the cost of a cup of coffee, for each employee, you can have the platform for the entire year. Like, so there's ways, so I think they do look at it as a cost, as opposed to looking at it through a different lens and realizing the impact it can have on engagement and retention and attraction. I think also, a lot of people have become quite, they're afraid to take risks and they're afraid to bring in new things. And they think it's, what if it doesn't work? So I think a lot of people are scared and they're just not looking at it in the right way. And I think you're spot on in that teams are thinking about, we'll just go back to how we were and people are going to come back into the office. That's not how people want to work. We need to be thinking about how we create a work environment that blends work and home life, because homes are our new work environment. I'm coming to you now from my home office right now, and I'll soon be getting up and, because it's early here in Australia, getting the kids ready for school. But how amazing is that, that I can now blend my work and home life together? So I think definitely it's the most progressive that are going to stand out. They're the ones that are going to win and they'll be ahead of the pack, because in 6-12 months, there's going to be a lot of companies that are kind of creeping back to old ways, and you watch, they will start to lose their employees very quickly.
Yeah, I think it's right. It's like we got used to this world where, people wanted ping pong tables or something, and like what employee perks were, right? Of like what we thought that they were. And now I think as we again kind of move forward into this new world, it's just really understanding how people's work habits have evolved. I talked to a pets benefits company that is just growing like crazy, because it's the same idea that look, people have pets at home and they want to take care of their pets, and it's the same way that people take care of their kids. And we're just seeing so many things pop up around this that, again, I just feel like a lot of HR leaders, like you said, safe, proven, we'll just offer more benefits or somebody else will do it for me. And it's like, no, I think and it's not just an HR issue, it's a executive issue, right? As an executive, you have to really think about, what you're offering and, how competitive is today versus when I grew up, this is what it was. So Jody, as we start to wrap up here, we talked about some of the trends, like let's talk about maybe the company, my kind of final question is, what are the things you're most excited about for the company? You're mission driven, you're making a difference. What are the things that get you up out of bed and get you excited in like your day to day still?
Yeah. I mean, the looking ahead and the future for us is super exciting. We're now launching into the US and we've got some incredible brands behind us. So Gap, Atlassian, Cultramp, Estee Lauder. We support, almost 70 companies globally now. And that's incredible for an organization, run by two female founders. and, you know, working with the most progressive companies globally. And I think what I'm really proud of is we maintain 95% retention of our customers. So that's testament to the fact that we know it works. Once you provide the right support, it does have an impact on engagement, advocacy, all of those key metrics. So I think I'm really excited about the global growth in what we're seeing, building the team. We're heading towards our Series A raise later this year, which is exciting for us. You know, going through any investment raise is a new challenge and an exciting one. We've got some incredible investors that, you know, are looking to participate and getting behind us. And I think, you know, COVID has changed everything for us. And if in a lot of ways, it's made our program more relevant than ever. I mean, people often say, you know, pandemics reshape society. And this one has absolutely shifted the balance of power from employers to employees. And I think that's exciting for us because, again, we know employees want to work for family-friendly organizations and they want to, they're rethinking, you know, what work means to them, how they're valued, how they spend their time. And so I'm super proud of, you know, the impact we can have. We've got a very strong social purpose, and that is to create a better world for working parents and caregivers. And that's what gets me up out of bed every day. And I think, you know, I look at my two little girls and I just hope that something like Circlein doesn't have to exist when they're my age. I just really hope that we get to a place in society where working parents are embraced and every organization has the right support, the right policies in place to enable their working parents and caregivers to thrive both at work and at home.
I love that. I love that. And we'll include links for everyone to check out more about what Jody and the team are up to. And it's been great getting to know you over the last few months and the team. And I think it's going to be, you know, this is one of those things, again, where as people return to work and are looking for alternative ways to work, I think the things that you're doing are going to be at the heart of it. So Jody, big, big thank you for joining me on the show.
Thank you. I've loved being part of it. Thanks to your team and the incredible support we've had. And yeah, let's do this. Let's, you know, let's just hope that COVID is starting to be a thing of the past and that we can move forward. And I'm super excited.
Awesome. Well, we are excited to have you. Everyone, make sure, like I said, check out what Jody and the team are doing. And we will see you next week on the Jake Dunlap Show.
All right. Thank you so much, everyone, for tuning in to another extremely fun and interesting episode. I thought it was fun and interesting, so I hope you did too, of the Jake Dunlap Show. Really great, just breaking down everything that makes people who they are, the success, the trials and errors, and I hope that you enjoyed it as much as I did. Make sure to subscribe on your favorite platform, and make sure, more than anything, to go over to jakedunlap.com. That's where you're going to stay up to date on all the latest guests, additional details, prep notes. We're going to be sharing everything on jakedunlap.com. So go ahead, go over there. You can subscribe there as well too. And we will see you next week on the Jake Dunlap Show.